forced from my home. I gotta think a lot of folk feel the same. I don't think they'll sit tight and wait for any announcement saying it's okay to go home. They'll come in, hear any reason that Jonah might have, and probably head back home. Whatever reason Jonah has for this, it's not some government controversy. Is that what people are thinking? Folks don't trust the government that well around here. Why? May quieted. I want to know why. I know that Jonah's got a reason. But a while back, before Tenderfoot Rush brought a lot of tourists to this region, people were hurting for money. Craigstown was dying, and a lot of resorts tried coming in to help out the revenue. The government said no because of the land. It set a lot of seeds inside people, and some of those seeds are still in bloom. Jonah was nearly crucified his first year here when he wouldn't let a big company into town. I thought that was actually good. Those people aren't thinking that right now. What sits with them is that Jonah didn't let them get more money. They like the water around here, but with being flooded and forced out of their homes, they're not too caring about its quality and such. A lot of resentment is resurfacing. Talk about doom and gloom. Jonah didn't speak to the group. Danny didn't think he was even there, but the mayor took the podium and announced everyone needed to stay together in the center. Flooding had increased more and more farther north, and that water would travel south. May's prediction turned out accurate. People stopped listening. Half the people left, and the ones who remained were becoming restless. Danny was playing cards with Aiden and Bubba when Robbie pulled up a chair. May had moved to a card game with Barney and Jeffries. Danny could hear their chatter. It became nice background noise. Robbie turned to her. "Where's Jonah?" Aiden and Bubba looked up from their card game. They had folded.
"I don't know."
"The mayor didn't really say anything," Aiden spoke up. "Just that we're supposed to sit tight, but Jonah texted me that if we get through the night, we should be okay."
"The water's gone down outside."
"Flooding up north can affect us too,"
Bubba said.
"I know, but my home's safe. I built it high enough."
"Nothing's safe," Aiden muttered to herself. "You can't expect anything to be immune to the weather, even if it's got money behind it." Robbie stiffened.
"What?"
"Nothing." Bubba didn't say a word.
"No."
Robbie pushed forward.
"What are you talking about?"
"Nothing."
"This have to do with your dad staying at my place?"
"No."
"Or was that some poke at me because I've got money?"
"You've got more than some."
Aiden sat up.
"You took a pretty penny with that settlement you won."
She explained to Danny.
"Robbie came to town to help with Julia's lawsuit."
"Erica's settlement." She turned back to Robbie.
"And you got partner because of that. You're one of the few attorneys in town. You make more than all three of us together, right here."
"Not Danny."
"What?"
Aiden and Bubba looked up.
"Danny's got near a million in the bank."
They all looked at her, and Danny asked, "How do you know that?" But she knew as soon as she asked. Kelly Lynn. "Never mind. I didn't realize your secretary came back into the bank. I thought she left. I love how everyone is connected in small towns." Her voice dripped with sarcasm.
"You have almost $1 million?
Aiden cried out.
"Where'd that come from? Does Jonah know?"
"Is it any of his business?" Danny countered. But he did know, and she didn't remember him having the same response.
"Do you not like people who have money?"
Aiden frowned.
"What are you talking about? Is this the money thing? Because you think they'll turn into your father?" "I can't believe you just said that to me."
Aiden sucked in her breath, taken aback. What she had in her bank account was her business and no one else's, along with the reason of why it was there, too.
"Yeah, well, my money is personal, Aiden. You don't have a right to demand to know that or command me to tell Jonah." "I wasn't..."
She was, and Aiden knew it.
"Maybe we should call a breather."
With his hand behind her, Bubba ushered his wife away.
"Don't worry about Aiden. She'll get over it. She's just worked up because her dad's in town. A person can't see straight when they're all riled up inside."
"Yeah, I'm seeing that." Danny gazed around the center. "You think this is some government conspiracy, too?" Robbie's eyes rounded, but he didn't pretend he didn't know what she was talking about. He lifted up a shoulder, picking at some lint on his pants.
"I wasn't here when all that happened back then. Aiden says the town got pretty ugly when Jonah said no to some company's building proposal.
May was hinting some people might be thinking that again.
Sometimes they think that. You know, the small guy gets worked over by the big guy. Do I think it's some conspiracy? No. But do I think people aren't thinking right? Yes. Some of them, anyway. Small towns don't like being told what to do, especially when it comes to their homes.
There's got to be some reason why we're all staying here.
They aren't sharing, whatever it is.
There's got to be a reason for that, too.
I think there is, and you think there is.
Robbie gestured between them.
But I don't think most of these folks agree with us.
Danny sighed. Everyone knows each other's business, and everyone's got an opinion about it, no matter how wrong they are.
A lot of these folks didn't get schooling past high school, and if it is, it's from the local community college. They got their knowledge the real world way. You and I, we left. We saw what else was out there, but people can get set in their ways. The world's a lot smaller than people think. You get humbled when you realize how small you actually are. Folks who don't realize that, they just have a different way of thinking. That's all.
That can be dangerous sometimes.
You're not getting an argument from me.
I don't have a good feeling about this, Danny murmured as she watched the crowd. More and more small groups were forming. The whispers were buzzing. It wasn't going to end well, whatever was happening.
There's Jonah.
Robbie gestured toward a side door. He moved through the crowd, stopping to talk to his sister. The crowd moved away from him. Robbie shook his head.
It's never surprising how they'll turn on someone they used to worship the day before.
Was this how it was before?
I don't know. I wasn't here at that time, but it got ugly. Jonah only had a few friends, but when the report came out that the company actually would have poisoned the water supply, Jonah was hailed as the town savior.
Robbie stood up as Jonah headed in their direction.
The town's not remembering that today.
He nodded in greeting.
Jonah? Robbie?
Jonah did the same and settled on Danny.
You want to get something to eat?
Sure. Jonah led the way into a private back room where food was waiting on a table. A buffet of meat, cheese, casseroles, bread, and even some lasagna was set out. Another table had drinks such as soda, water, and even some beer. What's this? Jonah pulled Danny close, murmuring close to her ear.
Even the wealthy get benefits in times of disasters.
How are we privileged?
I got some benefits, being the water whisperer. The mayor trusts me.
Even though everyone else forgets to, she felt a twinge of anger.
Jonah!
A voice behind them boomed with authority. Jonah stiffened beside her. A middle-aged man was crossing the room to them. Danny had one guess. Jonah's father. He extended his hand to her.
Elliot Bannon. Dad.
Jonah stepped forward.
I wasn't aware that a boat was sent for you.
Danny shook his hand, studying him a moment. I'm Danny. He walked with a purpose and a stride that told others to get out of his way. His hair was a rich dark brown, but there were graying hints scattered throughout the rich curls. His jaw was firm and pointed that told anyone who saw him that he had a purpose and he wouldn't veer off his course, no matter who be damned.
You're the O'Hara girl I've been told so much about.
Danny grinned, pulled her hand free, and tucked it behind her. I wouldn't believe anything that you're told from Drew Quandary. He just found out about my existence a few days ago, and he's not exactly a fan. Elliot took another assessing glance.
You're spirited. That's what Quandary told me, but he wasn't the one filling my head. I heard about your courageous feat during the tsunami. You saved 10 children, did you not? You were hailed a hero there, and yet you're here in Craigstown with my son?
Danny didn't reply. There was no point. He wanted her to know that he knew her in a way most didn't. The message was received. Elliot added,
You got a healthy award, too. Near 1 million, right?
Jonah stepped between them.
Danny's not going to be intimidated because you researched her.
True story. My dying aunt is scarier than you. Dad. Aiden was heading their way. Jonah held up a hand to her.
Aiden, I can handle this.
You shouldn't have to. Besides, I've got a few more things to say to him than you.
Aiden switched her focus.
Why'd you come here, Father?
Was it really to spearhead for the Quandrys, or did you decide to call our bluff? Okay, that house you're in, it's not mine. I don't live in a beautiful mansion. My husband isn't an executive for a local business that trades internationally. We have an average home, and I don't care what you think. I'm not moving into the city and working at one of your offices. I'd rather have my home flooded first.
She muttered under her breath,
which just happened.
Danny caught sight of the Quandrys. They were settling in the opposite corner of the first-class buffet. Drew's head was bent, talking with another middle-aged man around his 50s or 60s. Danny guessed that was the eldest Quandry. Boone sat at a table with Jenny and another woman. Jenny scooted her chair close enough to nearly be on his lap, but he promptly scooted his chair away. Danny couldn't help wondering if Quandry Incorporated would still want to build here. Flooding could be damaging. Were the mussels worth it? A new thought suddenly occurred to her. Aiden was still lashing out at her father when Danny took Jonah's arm. She pulled him away. Watching his sister, Jonah bent his head closer to Danny.
What is it?
That's why he's here. Jonah looked at her now.
What?
He's here to get in your head and mess you up.
I know.
There was movement at the door, and they both looked over. Trenton was there, his hand raised to get Jonah's attention.
I have to go.
He pulled her to him, his mouth close to her ear. He pressed a kiss to her forehead.
I'd run from here. Run and hide.
Danny chuckled. I'll hide behind May's skirt. May had never worn a skirt in her life. Unless it was a miniskirt. 44. May had enough around 10 that night. Jeffries, who'd been explaining what the dolphin on his wedding band symbolized, turned from Barney to May.
What's wrong?
Danny saw her aunt stand up. Oh no. A pit began to form in her stomach. Robbie turned to look where she was.
Huh? What's happening?
May. Both Jeffries and Barney were waiting.
Nothing. Everything.
She chewed on the end of her mouth, her eyes closed to slits.
This is enough. I'm done waiting. The water's almost completely gone. I'm going to make sure my livelihood is still standing. I'm a bit more worried about that than whatever secret plan they got cooking here.
May. Danny stood, too.
I'm sorry. I know you're invested here, but I'm going. We're going to be wasting an entire night, and they'll only come in the morning to tell us to leave. I'm going to save myself the wait and leave now.
They told us to stay here for our safety.
Robbie rose.
From what? We're in the clear. The flooding is up north, and the water's not coming down, or it would have been here by now.
The topsoil is eroding up there. They're worried about what that'll do to the river down here.
May could have rolled her eyes. Her tone gave the same effect.
The river hasn't flooded since the dam was built. We're fine. We're always fine. I'm going.
Barney and Jeffries stood, too.
Let's go, guys.
May motioned and followed behind. Jeffries offered Danny an apologetic smile, but fell in line. Robbie shook his head.
Huh.
What? Danny asked, but her attention had just left the building. If they left, she knew the ones who remained would follow. It only took one pebble to fall down for the whole pile to crash. This so wasn't good, and she had no idea where Jonah was.
I didn't know Jeffries was married.
There are some secrets that are just meant to be. I'm sure that's what it is. I've learned that much since moving home.
She had to find Jonah. He'd know what to do.
I have to go. I'm not going far. I'll be back.
She patted his arm.
Make a list.
For what?
For Kate.
They'd been discussing his love life before May decided to lead a revolution. If she's the one for you, start making a list of nice things to say and do for her. Trust me. Tell her she's beautiful and give her gifts. Lots of gifts. She'll melt.
You sure?
Oh, yeah.
She gestured outside the center. I need to find Jonah. I don't have a good feeling about this. But going outside, she couldn't find him. He wouldn't have been in the center, or he would have found her instead. The town was near vacant. Everyone left for their homes while the others remained inside. She walked around, hoping to see something or someone who might know where Jonah could be. She found herself in front of the boat store.
Danny?
She turned around.
Jake, I saw you and I figured you were out for a walk to clear your head or some sorts.
What are you doing here?
Folks can't get arrested for going to their homes. Jake shrugged. I saw you leave. Figured I should try to protect someone tonight.
Danny knew it was time. It was the conversation and the person they never talked about. She knew this talk would happen, and on some level she'd been waiting the entire time. Almost everything was done. She made peace with Julia and said her goodbye to Catherine. It felt right to have this talk now. It was time.
Did Erica say anything when she died? Like, Danny had no idea.
No.
His eyebrows bunched together and his head fell abruptly.
She did say some things, but...
It's okay. Her throat tightened with emotion. She felt something. Something was awakening inside of her.
She was so much like you, but she was different, too.
She was stronger.
No.
His response was swift.
She was different, that's all.
Danny swallowed.
She was funny. She was sarcastic, opinionated, thoughtful, regretful. She had the hardest times with Aunt Catherine, but she knew that Catherine needed her and Julia. She sucked it up and was dutiful.
Jake laughed.
That was the only time, or the only person, that I ever saw her be nice for them, not for her. I know that makes her sound like a horrible person, but she wasn't. I swear, Danny, she wasn't a bad person at all. She turned different when she was around Julia and Catherine, around some of her friends. But that wasn't all of her.
He added, an afterthought.
I wish you would have known that, Erica. You would have been friends. It was that Erica I loved.
Danny felt the first tear. Jake continued, hoarse.
She'd always put cloves in her food. I hated it. They were awful, but Erica said they had to be in there. They had a purpose, and I should just be patient. She loved lilies. She had them in vases all over the kitchen, and she even put up a wallpaper border of lilies in our bedroom.
Jake was allergic.
I hated them, but...
You loved her.
She was mine. She was a part of me.
Danny drew a ragged breath. You were my best friend, and I lost you to her. But I've never admitted to myself that it wasn't you I lost that night. It was her. I didn't know her, and we never had a chance. We were never given a chance. So much shit in our family. A hole was there. It was widening.
Erica kept a wall to the world. She lost her mother, and she had two older sisters. Julia kept it together by controlling everything. Erica told me she had to play along, or Julia would have freaked. Her words. And then she had you, but you pulled away before Erica knew what was going on. She was the youngest, Danny. She didn't know better. It was too late when she did.
Danny was already gone. He added,
You were a kid, too.
I was broken. Her fingernails curled into her skin. We were all broken. She looked at him, wiping away her tears. Is there a time when you get over it? When you start to put it all behind you?
Yeah.
Jake breathed out as his radio sounded static, then a call from headquarters. He switched it off.
When you learn what's broken you down, and you start to rebuild it.
It's that easy?
No, but it's the only way if you don't want to live half-lived.
Half-lived, she echoed. I wasn't even living before.
She saw your mom. When she was close to going, she told me that your mom was there. You weren't. Erica told me you were alive and that your mom said you were coming home.
His voice hitched on a note.
Erica told me you'd be home real soon, but time kept passing. I lost hope. I started to think that she just went crazy in that time, but then...
I came home. He nodded.
She's around, you know. I feel her, and sometimes when I'm not thinking, I'll hear her. She'll call my name like she's just come home. I always know better, but I'll walk down the stairs. I know she'll not be there, but I still do it anyway.
I didn't do right by Erica,
And I should have. She drew in some air, filling her lungs. I loved my sister.
She loved you, too.
She missed her sister. She missed the one she knew. She missed the one she didn't know. Well, Danny laughed. She needed a reprieve. Looking at Jake, he didn't seem like he had more to say, and Lord knows she was running empty on the tear tank. That's over now.
Yeah, it is. I'm relieved. Been waiting a while for that conversation.
Me too. They leaned against his squad car. I thought there'd be more tears.
Way more tears.
Tons.
Buckets.
Waterfalls. Jake grinned.
Oceans.
Jonah had been right. Jake was the one she needed to talk with. Danny suddenly felt so many words to share with her sister. Maybe she was around, maybe she wasn't. Danny liked to think she believed in the afterlife, but from a world so cold and bleak, sometimes Danny thought that death just meant rest. I'm tired, Danny announced. I'm really, really tired. Jake cleared his throat, and then his radio crackled to life. A code orange was called for the Craigstown County. Jake went still. What? He didn't move. Jake, what? It was bad. She felt it in her gut, and she knew it now. She was just waiting to hear the words confirming it.
A code orange means the dam burst.
Jake raised horrified eyes to her.
All that flooding, the erosion, it burst the dam.
The town
will be destroyed.
This is what Jonah was worried about. Those people went home.
I know. My God, I know. I have to go and warn them.
Jake scrambled into his car and gunned the engine.
Get to safety, Danny. Find Jonah. He'll take care of you.
Her nightmare was coming true. The first storm missed her. The flash floods were the warm-up, and now the second storm was coming for her. The water was coming. 45. She threw a rock through the boat store's window. There was no time to waste. They would need boats, lots of boats. Her heart pounding, it seemed to take forever for her to reach inside, unlock the door, and take a hammer to the keys locker. Her hands trembled as she tried to find too many keys to too many boats. They wouldn't fit. They'd fall. She nearly wept when one sunk in, fitting, then a second, then a third. She was sweating and biting down on her lip. She needed more boats than this. Life jackets. She needed those, too. Raiding a back room, she grabbed everything she could. Duct tape, flashlights, candy bars, flares, even prepaid cell phones. Anything that might be needed. Then she grabbed another round of matches, lighters, and all items that would provide heat. It took nearly 2 hours, and in the midst, she heard nothing. She was listening for something, anything, someone, anyone, even as she hit the releases on the boat carriers. No one sprinted past. No one was screaming or crying. Nothing. The silence was eerie. It was like the town was in the eye of a tornado. But it was coming. She knew it was coming. The hairs on the back of her neck were raised and hadn't fallen back down. The first wave would crush the streets. She was just waiting for it. She did as much as she could before running back outside. She looked up, and there it was. Her heart stopped. The wave was 30 feet above her, and it was then she realized how miraculous a dam was. She ran inside, just as the first wave hit the pavement. It swooshed past her, filling into the store. The two main windows were still intact, but they'd shatter any second. She climbed over each boat and started them. She couldn't drive all of them, but she looped a rope between a few. She could pull 3 or 4 behind her boat. She just had to wait until there was enough water. And then it happened. The windows broke under the weight. The water rushed in and Danny gunned the engine. She had to get the first boat out of the store. The water was rising fast, so she didn't have much time. She cleared it. The second did, too.
The third struggled, and the fourth was caught behind. She gunned her engine again. It was just enough to yank the fourth free. There were more inside that she released from their carriers, but she couldn't corral them all. She'd have to go back for them. As she drove through the town, the people came out. They were everywhere now. It was such a stark contrast from before, but as she saw people, she gave up a boat. She'd stall. They'd climb into the boat and unhook themselves from the rope. The only thing she yelled was for them to help pick up others. They stayed with her, helping to pick people up as they all headed to the center. A wall of people lined the center when they got there. They were standing at the edge of the water. Dani knew these people were alive, but not in her mind. She was back there with the first storm. These people were waving. Those people had been floating in the water, already dead. The bodies had been everywhere. Dani was mixing them together in her mind. The dead were raising their arms now.
Dani!
Jonah crashed through the crowd and ran to her boat. He jumped inside, crushing her next to him in the next breath. He held the back of her head, holding her against his chest before he kissed her forehead, then her lips.
I thought you were dead. My God!
He went back to just holding her, wrapping as much of himself around her.
I tried the phone, but I couldn't reach you, and then Jake said you were in the town.
He was touching her pockets, but she forgot about the phone. His hand found it, and he pulled it out.
The battery's dead.
Dead. She'd never get away from that word. The town was gone. Dani pulled away. The center would soon be as well. We have to go.
Jonah!
Hawk and Trenton were running toward them. Hawk separated, leaping into one of the last empty boats. He revved the engine and swung next to where Dani and Jonah stood. He yelled,
"We got a distress call!"
He stopped, his eyes flicking to Dani. She growled.
"Who?" "It's May,"
he said to Jonah.
"We can get them if we go now."
Jonah looked to Dani, but she was already pushing him away. "Go! Get her, please!" He was torn, but grabbed her for one more hug. He crushed her to him and said, his lips brushing against her forehead,
"I will come back for you. I will find you. Do not die, okay? Do not die."
"I won't," she pushed him again. "Go, she's my family." He did, tearing himself away. Hawk half lifted him into the boat as Jonah grabbed the edge and swung himself up. He didn't stop looking at Dani. He never broke contact. Hawk turned the boat and left. Jonah was slowly swallowed by the darkness. That wasn't real. He'd come back. He went to save May. Dani kept reminding herself of that. Then Trenton leapt onto her boat. He was yelling at her. She wasn't hearing him. She couldn't. All she could see was Jonah heading away from her. There were people streaming around her. She recognized the looks on their faces. Fear, uncertainty, anger, panic. They were all thinking the same thing. This wasn't real. This wasn't happening. They were all wrong. This was real. This was happening, and it was just the beginning. She sat down, saying to herself, "They're all going to die. Everyone was going to die."
"Dani, come on!"
Trenton was screaming at her. She half heard him. People were climbing into their boat. She just sat there. She was the eye of the storm, now. She was the middle of the tornado. The winds would ripple, they'd snarl, they'd curse, they'd be angry with her because it was her that they wanted. This whole storm was about taking back what was theirs. Her. The water was coming for her.
"Julia!"
Dani heard Trenton say her sister's name. Then someone climbed into the boat. A second person was behind her. Trenton was saying,
"Jake, who else?"
Dani looked up. Her sister was there, but she left? Dani remembered seeing her go. Julia yelled over Danny's head to Trenton. "The nursing home?"
"It was one of the first to go. It was crushed. I'm sorry."
He swept his gaze over both of them.
"Sorry, you guys."
Dani sat there. People were swimming past them, but she didn't know where they were going. There was no hope for any of them.
She was alive, and that meant they'd all die. The storm wouldn't stop, not until it claimed her.
"We have to go,"
Jake was yelling. The boat was moving. They were gliding over the water. Danny knew it wasn't peaceful. Waves and ripples broke over the surface, but she looked down. She saw the calm beneath. She could see them, the dead, already. They were in the water, their arms and hair hanging loose. They were content. Their eyes were calm. They were home.
"My house!"
Julia collapsed beside Danny. Her hand covered her mouth. She heard and lifted her head. There it was. Julia's house was completely overcome, but one tree still stood up. It was a rebel in the path of the water. It refused to sink below. Danny didn't think. She moved, going to the front of the boat where the spotlight was.
"Danny, what are you doing?"
She turned it on the tree, and there was another. Mrs. Bensfield was tied to a branch, one that Danny remembered swinging from as a child. Julia gasped.
"Mrs. Bensfield!"
Trenton steered the boat over, and Jake grabbed the older woman. He had to cut away at the rope she used to tie herself to the tree. Hauling her into the boat, Mrs. Bensfield looked vanquished and depleted. She was soaked. Her arms looked like twigs, and her lips were so blue. She was shaking from the cold.
"Can we go?" she snapped at Trenton. "I've already watched Goldeneye get swept up by this crush. I don't want to follow my favorite cow."
Julia yelled,
"We have to go south."
"Why? That doesn't make any sense. We need to cut across the current. It'll flatten out.
Listen to me, Danny."
It had been Trenton arguing with her. Trenton who was driving. But it was Danny who Julia spoke to. She was so earnest.
"We have to go south. I was told that."
"Who told you to go south?" Her sister sat back down.
"You wouldn't believe me if I told you."
"Julia!"
Trenton leaned closer, yelling over the water.
"I'm not turning this boat around for more flooding. If we cut across, the wind is too great. If we cut across, we'll capsize and drown."
Jake was staring at his fiancée.
"Julia, who said that we need to go south?"
"Just trust me."
"No."
Julia had the survival instinct of an extinct species. Danny didn't blame them for their disbelief.
"Danny!"
She turned to her. Trenton was waiting. They were all waiting. Somehow, it became Danny's decision. Mrs. Bensfield screamed as a sudden wave crashed over her. Danny saw her slipping before she could scream again. Danny woke up. She didn't know why or how it happened, but she woke up. She'd been okay with dying, and then she wasn't. Suddenly, she was fighting. She had to live. She surged across the boat and clamped a hand on Mrs. Bensfield's leg. Trenton was trying to steer the boat toward calmer waters as Danny wrapped the anchor's rope around Mrs. Bensfield's leg.
"Ah!"
Mrs. Bensfield's body lifted from the wave's force. The anchor held. It didn't move, and she slammed back down.
"Grab onto a rope and wrap it around yourself. We have to stay in this boat."
Danny was looking around. She thought she put more rope in this boat.
"Unless it capsizes right here and now,"
Julia shouted back.
"We have to go south, Danny."
She twisted to face her sister.
"I was told to go south. When have I ever lied to you?"
"You lie all the time." Danny gritted her teeth as she held onto the anchor's rope.
"Okay, but not about this."
"We're going to die because of this, Julia. You know that, right?" Danny wanted to make sure her sister knew what she was saying, that she wasn't going crazy how Danny thought she herself was.
"We'll die if we cut across," Julia slouched over. "We have to go south,"
she yelled over Danny's head.
"Go, Trenton! We don't have a lot of time, and we have to get there."
He waited, looking at Danny for confirmation. She nodded. He turned the boat and gunned the engine. All of them fell back, then tossed to the right and left from the waves. They were increasing in height and force. Trenton kept driving, but the last wave nearly sent Danny flying from the boat. She wound the anchor's rope around her waist, and it jerked her back down. Then she looked up. Wave after wave was coming. They were all going to crash down on them, and it wouldn't last. They wouldn't last. Danny was forced with the truth. We're going to capsize, Julia. We need life jackets. We need... No! Julia screamed against the wind. We need the anchor. Where are we, Danny? Do you know where we are? We're in the middle of nowhere. That's where we are. No, where are we? Do you know where we are now? Mrs. Bensfield screamed. I think I broke a rib. Danny glanced around. She was becoming frantic, but her eyes caught sight of a tree. One lone tree that stuck up from the rest, and her heart suddenly pounded to life. Oh, God, she murmured, dazed. She stood up. You're right, Julia. We need the anchor. We need... There should be small heating packs inside that compartment. Grab them all and put them in a closed pocket, something that can be zipped closed. My ribs! Trenton stalled the engine. He leaned toward Danny.
What's going on?
Julia scrambled up. Where are we? There's a cave. I'm going over to that tree and we can follow it down to the cave. We'll have to swim around, but there should be an air pocket inside that cave. There's blankets and dry clothes in there. She twisted to Trenton, smiling so brightly. She had new hope. It's the cave. Call in our location. They'll have to come find us. I can't breathe, Mrs. Bensfield gasped. My rib is broken. I can't hold my breath for that long. You're going to have to, Danny said. No one else was going to die. I'm not going to make it. Mrs. Bensfield was calm and accepting. Danny knew what she was feeling. She'd felt it nearly the entire time, but now she didn't want to die. She wanted to fight, and she wouldn't give up. You can try, Mrs. Bensfield, Danny yelled. Nannery, she said. A kind smile looked alien across her wrinkled face. My name's Nannery. She reached and grabbed Danny's hand. I've got some truths to confess here. Julia stilled and looked up. Trenton was on the radio, giving their location, but Danny froze and watched. Nannery drew in a breath, grunting from the pain. My husband loved your grandma, but you knew that. He snuck around on me for a while before he up and left, but he came back through town every so often. It's why Sandy had three of them. It wasn't ever told. I never told a soul, but your mama screwed that up. She started coming around. We don't have time for this, Julia screamed. Danny shot a hand out to quiet her sister. Shut up and let her talk. Nannery was wheezing, grimacing. There was no blood left in her face. My boy, I had to tell your mama about who her daddy was. She couldn't take a liking to my Oscar. It wasn't right. That's why she was the only one who visited her. Sandy used to be my best friend, and even though I hated her, I knew she didn't want her children knowing she was all sorts of crazy. What are you talking about? Julia cried out. We're going to die. Danny rounded on her. Then I'm going to die knowing the truth. Julia shut up. Nannery coughed before she managed. I've got all sorts of guilt that eats at me, and one of the worst, your mama. What do you mean? Me and her got real tight. I was the only one she could talk to about her mama, but she had the same curse Sandy did. It was a married man. Danny knew. He was married, but not happily. Daniela let that right her mind so she wasn't guilt-ridden, but Catherine stuck her hand into the mix, you see. Catherine loved him, too. He didn't have time for her. It was only Daniela he loved. What are you saying? Julia asked. Her voice was suddenly so calm against the chaos surrounding them. Your pop is here. He's been around, but Daniela didn't want you guys to know. She was ashamed. She didn't want her kiddies knowing what a screw-up she was. Nannery coughed again and hissed from the pain.
She knew that Catherine would take a liking to the two because they looked like their daddy, but Daniela knew that Danny would be left in the cold. She didn't know what to do when she found out she was dying.
Julia and Danny stood and waited, hearing their secrets spew from a stranger's mouth.
I never done right by your mama. My boy took off. He disowned me for keeping that secret so many years. He said he couldn't have a mother who knew he had three sisters and not tell him that. He couldn't ever trust me again, so he took off. I've never seen him since. Suppose now I won't.
Danny raised her chin. If he comes back, I'll tell him that you did right in the end. Nannery's smile was quick. She grasped for her hand, giving it a good squeeze.
Thank you.
She slumped forward. Danny recognized the signs. The cracked ribs and the storm. Mrs. Bensfield was going to die. Her will to hang on was slipping. Danny saw that, too. The exertion was too much, but Mrs. Bensfield unwound the anchor's rope from her leg. It was now free from her. She'd lived a tumultuous life, and she'd die in a tumultuous storm. The poetry wasn't lost on Danny as she knelt beside this woman. Who is our father?
You know him, Nannery smiled. You've talked to him. He's with May all the time.
That was enough. Danny stood back up. She knew. He wore a white dolphin on his wedding ring. Danny had sat just in front of them with her back turned. She hadn't been listening, but now Jeffrey's words came back to her. She heard it all. It's the dolphin that stood for healing and loss. Jeffrey's had told her mom about the dolphin. I know who he is. 46. Mrs. Bensfield continued,
I've run into him a bit, around town and such. He always knew that I knew his secret, and one time he talked to me about it. Your mama didn't want her secret told, that she'd been with a married man.
He was older.
He still is old, but he watches you guys. He keeps updates on you, Danny, from May and from you, Julia, through Jake. Your fiancé stops in May's grill on a regular basis and talks a plenty of his girl.
Danny was thrown across the boat as a wave rocked the boat.
Danny, Julia shouted and reached for her sister. I'm sorry, Nannery shouted now as she stood up. I could have saved your family. I knew all the secrets, but I chose not to. I'm sorry.
We have to go.
Jake had been watching the waves. He motioned for them now.
Now!
Danny!
Julia screamed into her ear, and Danny reacted instinctively as another wave crashed against them. She dove for something to hold on to, and Trenton gunned the engine. The boat shot across the small divide. The tree brushed against their helm. They didn't have time for any more death-side confessions. Danny grabbed the anchor, her sister, and as her hand made contact, the boat was rocked, and this time, it capsized. All of them plunged into the cold water. Danny kicked upward, pulling her sister after her, and both gasped their last breath. Trenton and Jake were there. Nannery wasn't. We don't have long. I'm holding the anchor. Just barely. We're going to fall fast with the anchor. Don't fight it, Danny said to the guys. Everyone has to hold on. Your lungs will burn, but it's the only way. You gotta trust me. The guys would be fine. She looked at Julia.
You have to trust me. I do.
Danny saw that she did. Julia wrapped a hand around the anchor's rope, and she pulled away from her sister. They were both connected now. Jake and Trenton held on to the rest of the anchor's rope. Each gave Danny a grim nod. Danny knew their destination, but she didn't know if they'd make it or not.
There's a cave underneath this tree,
If I don't make it, you just swim around the cave and go inside. You keep swimming until you clear the hedge. Then you can swim upward and you'll feel the surface from inside the water. She looked to Trenton. He knows. He can lead you in if I can't. Julia gasped. Shut up. Let's go. Then she said, Danny. She trailed off, treading water. I know. Danny stopped her. I know. Julia nodded, settled, and Danny saw that her sister was ready. It wasn't like the last time, Danny thought, before she dropped the anchor. It was time. She was going to find out if death called her number.
Danny, I'm writing this letter, but I have no way of getting this to you, so it's not even really for you. Selfish, aren't I? Well, tough. I don't know where you are, but you're right or I'm right. I don't know which right now, but this is for me and my mental health. Jake says I need to be sound in the head if I have any way to fight this crap that I have. What Jake doesn't know won't hurt him, right? Wrong. I'm dying, and I know it, and he's got to admit it. You know what? I'm pretty mad at that, too. Seriously, I'm here and I'm dying and you're the one who took off? I bet you're rich, married, and you already have kids, right? Jake seems to think you're dead. Everyone else, too, but I just think it's because Aunt Catherine is spreading that rumor out of spite. She thinks you've left her, and who could ever leave Aunt Catherine? Obviously, someone who's dead. I'm rolling my eyes. She's demented, I know that, but she raised me, and Julia needs her. Jake's scared to death of her. That always makes me laugh. It's really the only moments of amusement that I have lately. I just watch to see how nervous he gets whenever she shows her face. It's so funny how his hand will twitch. He always denies it, but I saw that he sat on his hand today, and his eyes looked so strained. Jake's such a guy. He won't admit someone could terrify him like that. Oh, and he has this little jerk at the corner of his mouth. He's got a nervous disorder, but anyway, I'm writing this letter for me because he told me to. I'm not only dying, but I'm crazy. Crazy and illogical, that's me. But I'm so far gone on the death road that I don't even care. That's kind of funny, too. I can say senseless things like, oh, how the butterflies are so pretty, and everyone will agree and pat my arm and say that the butterflies are gorgeous. And this is in the winter. I told one guy who I saw that he owned a camel in his future. The guy went out and bought a camel. I laughed so hard when Jake told me that. Jake didn't get it. He just got that cute, perplexed look on his face, like he wants to tell me that I'm not making sense, but he doesn't want to hurt my feelings. I love that look. I think it's why I fell in love with him. But, yeah, that's the other part of this letter. You took off after Jake broke up with you. He broke up with you for me, but that's a little part of history that I want to set right. Jake didn't break up with you. I watched you guys. Yes, you were best friends and you were dating, but you weren't any couple that I've ever seen. You left him long before he left you, Danny, and you know it. You just put up a wall, and it's amazing he stuck around as long as he did. He did that because he loves you. Sometimes I just hate you. I really do, because it's not fair how the man who I have fallen completely head over heels for still loves you. I can't touch whatever part you have in him. And trust me, I've tried. The guy just gets this stubborn look and walks away to get me some water or something. We've talked about you a lot, but we haven't talked about you and him, you know? Anyway, I'm going to die pretty soon, and here's my confession. I'm not okay that the guy I love with my whole heart still has a part of his for you. I'm not okay with that, and if I were, I'd have to kill myself. I am resolved to it, or have reluctantly come to terms with that. I can't touch what you got with him, but here's my shallowness peeking. I'm going to be the girl he loved who died. That's major, and it'll leave its scars. I know that, and a part of me is happy about it. I know,
so morbid of me. I'm dying, Danny, and I've known for a while. No one else has. I knew I had cancer before I was diagnosed, but no one will admit that I'm not going to win. I'm not going to be that girl. It'll be someone else. Probably you or Julia or... I don't know. I care, but I don't care. Anyway, on to more confessions. Did you know that our grandmother is still alive? Of course, now that I'm bedridden, I get told by some guy who's saying he's my uncle that our grandmother is in an asylum. I guess his dad shacked up with Grandmom and spurted Mom, Catherine, and May out. It's pretty amazing what dying will give you. All sorts of people will show up at my bedside and talk all sorts of nonsense that they'd want me to know before I'm dead. Our uncle is pretty cool. He's come to visit me a few times. He's funny, but he's kind of straight-laced. Not the sort to drink or smoke or have sex, but I'm sure he's had sex. No one can be that straight-laced, right? But the third confession. I know who our dad is. That's something I'm more pissed about than thinking you're married, wealthy, and have kids. I'm about to die any day now, and my dad walks through the door. How unfair is that? I'm pissed. I'm beyond pissed, and I'm even madder that I can't tell anyone. No one will understand, and if I do say something, they'll just pat me on the head because I'm dying, and of course, I'm delusional. Butterflies are beautiful. Yes, Erica, they sure are. I'm going to buy a camel. Of course I am. It's funny, but I hate it right now. I met my father, and no one believes me. They wouldn't believe me, and even Jake... It makes me so sick, because he'd think about you first. He wouldn't ever admit it, but I know that in some part of his brain he'd be thinking how sad it was that you left before you could meet your father. I hate that. I hate you, sometimes. Julia's freaking out. She's got no one to put lotion on or pat their heads and swat away the flies. I love Julia, I really do, but some days it's just so tiring. I want to rattle her cage and make her see life. I'm dying, and I have a sister who's living through me. What am I supposed to do? I'm not supposed to be the one saving her life. That's not fair, and it's not right, but I guess it makes sense, huh? I'm dying, so I can see all clear-headed and such. Julia's got her head in the clouds, but you should be here, too. This is your job. You're my sister, our sister, and it's pretty damn cowardly that you ran away. Cowardly and selfish, because even though our family isn't the Cleavers, we're still family. I should be here too, and you should help with Julia. She's going to need so much help when I'm gone. I'm going to be gone. I'm not going to be hurting. I'll be freaking happy as hell. I'm so going to heaven, but it'll be Jake and Julia who are going to be empty. I need you to help. Be there for them. Be the best friend for Jake he needs, and as much as it pains my jealous side to say, he has been missing you so much. I almost think he'd rather still be loving someone who didn't need him rather than go without his best friend. And Julia. God. I know her idiosyncrasies can make a person mental, but man, she's our sister. She's going to get a wake-up call when I die. Be a sister. Be my sister. I'm not sorry that I fell in love with Jake. I love him, and I'm never going to apologize for that, but I am so mad that you can be so petty about that. I lost you. I know that we weren't close, that I'm learning more and more from Jake that you were struggling on your own, but I lost my sister when you left. Jake tells me about you on a weekly basis, not every day, but maybe once or twice a week, and it sounds like you and I have a lot in common. We both put on a show for the world to see. I plastered on the happy and charming face while you were just contemptuous and didn't need us. That's what I thought for so long, that you just didn't need anyone, because you were so above us. Jake said that I was wrong and couldn't be further from the truth. I'm sorry, Danny. I wish I would have known the real you in living. But I have the afterlife to appease me. I'll be watching you, every chance I get, and I'm going to haunt your ass so much. If there's a simple breeze that gets you, it's me. I swear it. I love you,
living and in death. I'm always going to love you. Be there for Jake and Julia. They need you. And every time a bird flies by your head, think of me because I probably made it do that, especially if they take a dump on you. That really was me, then. Insert evil laugh with a smile and wink from me. Sincerely, in death and still alive for the moment, Erica. P.S. Tell the guy who bought the camel that I'm really sorry. I totally made that up. I didn't mean for him to be spit on. At all. I guess camels aren't that nice. Epilogue. I survived the flood that demolished Craigstown. Both Julia and I survived it. Jonah found all of us. It was an awakening experience to see the bubbles break the surface as the first diver pulled himself upright onto our bank. I knew it was Jonah before he even showed his face, and it wasn't that I recognized his body or how he moved. I just knew it was him. The first bubble bore his name, and I blinked back tears of gratefulness. They weren't tears that I was happy to be alive. They were just happy tears, just because. You see, this story wasn't about falling in love or reuniting with my estranged sister. It wasn't even about me realizing that I'd been cheated by myself and others from Erica. This story was about me. I came home, haunted, and I fought through the second storm. I needed to fight, and Jonah had been the first to spark that fight inside of me. I was grateful for that, more than I could ever put into words. Trenton and Jake waited. Julia wept that she was alive as Jonah peeled off the face mask, but his eyes found me first. He ignored my hysterical sister as I stood calm. My petty side loved that. Jonah caught me in his arms and wouldn't let go for more than 2 minutes. Julia grew silent, a bit miffed, if you ask me, but how do you gripe to a pair of lip-locked lovers? Her brush with death had given her some maturity, but I knew then Julia would always want the attention. That would never leave her, because that was just my sister. And then Jonah gave me a second gift. He whispered that May was alive, and my tears broke free at that moment. A fist curled against his chest, and he merely held me longer. My knees were unsteady. My knees were always unsteady around him. I'd grown used to it, but my knees gave out in that moment. Jonah gave Trenton a side hug. He gave Jake a tap on the shoulder, but then he swept me up and carried me to a private corner. Julia and the others huddled with blankets, watching for more bubbles. We stayed there as more divers popped up. They helped ready the others, even Trenton. His hands and arms grew weak. He needed help getting his mask on. Then all of them dove back in. Jonah held me against his chest with his arms around my front. He whispered into my neck,
I thought you were gone.
I thought I was supposed to go. His arms tightened. He dropped a kiss to my shoulder.
There's a lot that I want to talk to you about, but before I lose the chance to say it, I am in love with you.
The magic of dancing herbs and magical spices burst forth in me. Thank you, I whispered. Jonah laughed.
Not the response I was going for.
No, I mean, thank you. For giving me that spark back. For being the first one to give that spark back to me. I turned in his arms and grasped his face. I love you, too. I had hope. Jonah helped me get that back, and it wasn't something I could tell. It wasn't a feeling that could be explained. I left home with no hope, and I returned to get that hope again. I had it now, and it took a demolished town to realize it was there, inside me, the whole time. Thank you. This time, I spoke to my mother and my sister. They were around. They told Julia to go south, even though Julia would never admit it. All sorts of channels will open in times of crisis, and that's when belief can come flooding in. Jonah and I swam back out and were welcomed with warmed blankets. Jake grabbed me in a bone-crushing hug before he set me back down and returned to Julia's side. And I knew that my sister changed when she offered me a smile, an actual smile, and looked content as Jake wrapped his arms around her once more. Later, Julia would tell me that she received a phone call. Aunt Catherine died 19 minutes before the first wave crashed into Craigstown. I've thought about that quite a bit since then. And the way I envisioned it, she merely closed her eyes, her hands folded over her chest, peaceful, as the first wave took her body. It was almost a beautiful way to go. Through the rest of that summer and into the fall, Craigstown was rebuilt. It went a lot faster because of the gray pearls. Those little muscles came in useful when they were needed. In some ways, it was like they were meant to be discovered when they were. There were a lot of other heroes hailed from the flood, but I was one of them. I didn't run this time. I didn't want to run, and I knew that whatever was broken inside had healed. You see, I was my own monster. When you don't have hope, something can grow inside of you that will just keep hurting, biting, snarling. You sink farther, and eventually that monster will overtake you. Some people don't fight back. They might hurt others, hurt themselves, or relinquish the fight for happiness. I can't explain what happened or how it happened, but learning my family's secrets helped me learn who I was inside. I gained perspective and realized it wasn't me. I wasn't the one who screwed everything up. I wasn't the defect. It was them. It was the lies that tore apart my family, that kept my sisters and me from banding together. We stood no chance as children, but now that I know everything, God help me, I was piecing my home back together. Julia and I started slowly, but by the last brick that cemented Craigstown, she stood at my side. We even visited Sandra together. May still wouldn't go, but that's her fight with her own mother. I just know that if my mom were still alive, nothing would keep me from her side. Not anymore. Boone returned to his own home and to his own story. He did me a favor and took his family with him. A part of my heart wanted to reach out to him, but the truth was that I hadn't had a heart to give him before. And now that I did, Jonah already claimed ownership. If it hadn't been Jonah, if I'd never survived the first storm and returned home, I couldn't tell you what would have happened between Boone and me. All I know, his name will always be Boone for me, and a part of me will always wish that I could have loved him as he deserved to be. That just meant that someone else was meant for him. He'll fit with her how Jonah fits with me, how Jake and Julia seem to fit, Aiden and Bubba, Kate and Robbie, yes, finally, and how May confessed that she fit with Jeffries. That's one of my last revelations. May always knew he was my father. He loved my mom, but he folded under pressure and married his wife. He had the dolphin emblazoned on his wedding ring because he truly wanted to make his marriage work. He tried and failed. My mom was around the corner. May was the one who explained it, but she didn't need to. I was aware that life's never simple, especially in adult years. His story is meant for another time, but it ended sadly and bitterly, because when he'd left his wife, my mom had undergone her last round of chemo. He arrived to her hospital room to see her fingers fall lifeless as they were curled with mine. I'd been sleeping, but I woke up. I never noticed the big man in our doorway. I just noticed how my mom wasn't there anymore. May told him that the secret was out, that the daughters he'd loved from a distance now knew. Later, Jeffries would tell me that he kept quiet because he didn't want to do any more damage to another human being, and his daughters were the very last ones he would want to ruin. I was learning that that's my dad for you, but again, another time and another story. I always liked to remember that my first words to him as I shuffled into May's new bar and took the perch beside him were, "You've been here the whole time." Apprehension, love, nervousness, caution, all those emotions were rolled together as he stared at me, but all I saw was the love.
a father's love, and I'm slowly realizing that it's a special entity on its own. I have my right to anger, the right to call him a coward, but I'd just been given a rebirth at life. I wasn't holding grudges. I didn't have time for that anymore. And Erica. It still took me a while to visit her. The cemetery remained intact, and the headstone stood upright strongly. I thought about that, too, and envisioned that mass of water that crushed everything else. It hadn't touched what lay buried underneath. The tombstones stayed in place and watched everything become uprooted above them. I sat with my back resting on her tombstone, and I read the letter she left for me. She knew that I was coming back. Somehow, it felt right that she had been the one to know. A bird nearly crashed into me, but after I folded up her letter, I just looked up and grinned. I love you, too. I turned and left. Jonah was waiting for me, along with our daughter. We named her Erica Daniela. This concludes Home Tears by Tijan, narrated by Sarah Mollo Christensen. Copyright 2016 by Tijan Meyer. This unabridged audiobook is published by arrangement with Tijan, care of Brower Literary and Management, and was produced in the year 2017 by Tantor Media Incorporated, a division of Recorded Books, which holds the copyright thereto. Please visit tantor.com for more information on our growing library of unabridged audiobooks and to take advantage